Turning to the news, the first item that caught my attention is that I recognize that that Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras had resigned as the Prime Minister of Greece after having turned out to be a complete hypocrite. Now, this is a communist who campaigned on a communist agenda, telling the Greeks that they were entitled to monies being provided by other countries, and that they were entitled to their pensions, and they were entitled to their overpaid government jobs, and they were entitled to all manner of government handouts. They were entitled. And that this notion that other Europeans should not fund these entitlements made the Europeans terrorists, made the Europeans blackmailers. I mean, it was the most ridiculous political rhetoric that I may have ever heard, and yet he won election based upon that rhetoric. And then he encouraged Greeks to say that they supported, that they were opposed to, I should say, the Greek bailout. And they voted 61% in opposition to the bailout, and then he acquiesced to the terms of the bailout. So members of his Syriza party, his communist party, have said, to hell with him. So they've pulled their support away from him, and they've gone off and said, we're just going to form a new party. It'll be called the Popular Unity Party. That's, you know, communism. We're all united, and we're all popular. Popular Unity. That's the new communist party, and they're going to hold new elections. And the head of the new Popular Unity Party says, if it's necessary for us to cancel the memorandum that our prime minister just signed and that we approved as a governing body with the Europeans after they have given us another, I don't know what it was, $15, $20, $30 billion more. Now then we'll do it and we'll exit the euro now that they've given us the money. That's the mentality of immoral individuals. It's the mentality of the Ukrainians, for example. Give us the money, and then we'll renege on the agreement.
It's called theft.
Yeah. I would call it theft.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's called theft. If you take something and you know, and you say, you know, let's say you loaned me $100, and then you were like, hey, can I get my $100 back? And I was just like, no,
no.
Pretty much just robbed you.
Yeah, we have what about that agreement that you signed in writing that said that you agreed to these terms and were going to pay me back under this standard and provide interest at this rate? What about all that?
Doesn't matter. I don't care. Not paying you.
Not paying you. Yeah, I'm just going to exit our agreement.
They'd probably go with this. Well, I don't have the money, so come and get it. You know, okay, great.
Well, no, I've got the money. You gave it to me.
Well, yeah, but no, they spent that. They don't have that money anymore.
They want to give them the money anymore. 4 or 5 days ago.
I mean, a movie just came out. I had to go see that movie. You know I told you I needed the money, but this movie came out. I had to go see it. And, you know, you can't go to a movie without buying a pop and popcorn.
Yeah.
So that's what I use the $100 on. I don't have any more. It's theft.
Yeah. In exchange, this article says, for another... I was wrong. I apologize for being wrong. It was 86 billion euros, 95 billion dollars, 61 billion pounds. But since we're going to use dollars here as our number, they just received 95 billion dollars. And Cyprus had signed on behalf of Greece, and the parliament approved the agreement to accept that money under very specific terms and conditions. Now, this says, had agreed to painful state sector cuts. Painful state sector cuts. So, if the federal government were providing you with $1,000 a month pension, $1,000 a month to pay for your health care for you and your family, $1,000 a month on a food allowance, $1,000 a month on on educational allowance.
Don't forget about rent. Get
okay,
rent
on $1,000 a month for rent allowance. If they were giving you all that stuff, and they cut it to $750 a month for each of those things, have they pained you? How is that painful? Now, I understand that if the government was taking $500 a month for you, from you, to fund somebody else's rent, food, and other manners of entitlements, if they were taking $500 a month to pay for somebody else's health care, $500 a month to pay for somebody else's food, some $500 a month to pay for somebody else's rent, and $500 a month to pay for somebody else's pension a month from you, and they decided that rather than taking $2,000 a month from you, now they're going to take $4,000 a month from you, you could call that painful.
That would be very painful. That would be.
So how is this painful when all Greece agreed to do is to diminish the amount of monies that were being paid by the government to Greek citizens, as opposed to agreed to that the amount that Greek citizens were going to be paying the Greek government was going to be enormously increased? How can that be a painful?
It shouldn't be painful.
How is it a painful cut?
It shouldn't be painful at all. You're still getting still getting money that you don't have to do anything more for. It shouldn't be that painful at all.
Shouldn't be painful, period.
And nobody should look at that and say, "Oh, we really got to fix this. We got to make it so they can keep their same amount of stuff that they're getting." It's the same thing here. Welfare benefits being cut shouldn't be something that
painful?
That's painful to anybody, and it shouldn't be something that we bend over backwards to maintain.
Well, I don't think we should.
We shouldn't.
We shouldn't. We should just eliminate them. But this idea that eliminating a gratuity is painful, something you've done nothing for, it's not like gratuity, like you decide that you go to a restaurant, and your choices are to pay the waiter or waitress nothing, to pay the waiter or waitress 10% or 20% or 30%. They have performed some service for you, whether it be good or not so good. And if you deem that service to have been outstanding, you give them 20%. If a service is subpar, you might give them 10%. If the service was actually given in a mean-spirited way, they messed up everything that you got, and it was a bad experience, you may choose to give them nothing. But tell me, how is any one of those things painful?
They're not. But that's, again, this is the problem. This is the problem with the world today. Apparently, is that everybody thinks that.
But go the other way. Let's say that that I'm walking by a restaurant. I'm walking by a restaurant, and everybody that walks by the restaurant has $10 lifted from their purse or wallet to fund those that are in the restaurant that's actually closed because they provided no benefit, they provided no food, they provided no service. So what you have is a bunch of people loitering at this restaurant, doing nothing, and they are lifting a $10 bill from everybody's purse and pocket that walks by. Well, have you pained them if they only get to lift a $5 bill from everybody's pocket that walks by for doing nothing?
Well, one, stop taking that route to work. Take a different route. And then two, you haven't pained them at all. If somebody comes and robs you, and they rob you the first day, they only get $100, and then they rob you a second day, and they only get $80. Should the robber be offended?
Has the robber been pained that he only stole $80 from you, took $80 on the second attempt on robbing you, and then only got $60 the next time?
Yeah.
Was it austerity towards the robber?
Or did you just learn that, hey, you know what, I'm not going to take cash around anymore? It doesn't make any sense, and it's robbery. It's robbery. It's theft.
The head of the new Popular Unity Party said that it's time that we smash the Eurozone dictatorship. So we're not going to take any personal responsibility. We're not taking any responsibility for being bankrupt. We're not going to take any responsibility of robbing productive people in our country and robbing businesses in our country to the point that there are virtually no productive businesses left in our country and no productive people engaged in our country. And we have created an entire country of dependence. We're not going to take any responsibility for that. We had nothing to do with overpaying our government workers and providing them with too large of pensions and from overtaxing our businesses so that they dried up. We'll take no responsibility. Nope. We're not going to even take responsibility for agreeing to the terms of another bailout and then reneging on them. No, what we're going to do is we're going to label those that provided the money as dictators. And we have to smash the Eurozone dictatorship. What is wrong with these idiots?
That's just stupid.
God, what is wrong with these idiots? I mean, imagine, and you know what's amazing? Is the rhetoric is popular enough that this new popular party is the second most popular in Greece. I'm just going to tell you,
I think they're going to work it out. I think they'll figure it out. The Greece probably won't be an issue.
Oh, man. The Islamic State today demolished a Christian monastery in central Syria. Do you care that one religious group demolished a monastery used over the centuries by another religious group?
No, I don't care.
I don't care either. I do think it's worth noting that it has occurred, because what it demonstrates is that with Islam there is no tolerance.
Well,
there is no choice.
I was going to say I care because of what you can use it to show. I mean,
right.
Show that they don't have friends. They don't have we can tolerate these people. It shows that they're against everything.
Right, and that they will absolutely provide no choice other than surrender to Islam. And it also says, did they build a new monastery? No. Did they build a civic center in the spot that is available to all people? No. So what is Islam when it destroys? Oh, there's a word for that. They're destructive. Welcome back to Saturday Miss. It's interesting that the Islamic State, to just underscore the point that Islam is destructive, and that Islam is intolerant. And I don't have a problem with somebody being intolerant of those things which are despicable. In fact, I would encourage us as a species to be intolerant of and to be opposed to those things which are deadly, deceitful, destructive, damning, and perverted, particularly when they prey on innocent women and children, as does Islam. Particularly when they terrorize those who cannot defend themselves, and they come and approach the defenseless civilians with all manner of weaponry, then I think it is appropriate to be intolerant of those things. And there are times when it's even appropriate to be destructive, when it's time to demolish those things which are used in a harmful way. You know, I think that, for example, America would be safer if we were to demolish its military capability.
I actually heard a quote yesterday that I wish more, it was from a politician, and I wish more politicians would understand it. He's talking about the military, and he goes, I think we as Americans need to understand that our military can't fix anything.
Right.
And he even said, that, you know, the only thing that the military can do is stop things.
Yeah, really, and the military can't really stop much of anything, and that's even wrong there. What the military can do is it can kill and it can destroy. And those are the two things, kill and destroy. So those are the only two things that militaries exist to be able to do, to kill and destroy. Now, if you when this is really a misunderstood concept, killing does not necessarily stop. If you kill an individual, you have stopped that individual,
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just like if you destroy a tank, you've stopped the tank. But if the source of individuals uses your killing of that individual to recruit more individuals, so that rather than having one individual coming at you who you've killed and therefore stopped, you now have 100 coming at you. Did you stop the onslaught, or did you exacerbate it?
Exacerbated it.
Yeah. Now, if in the tank example, if you used your military to destroy a tank and therefore stopped the tank, what if it enraged those who were operating the tank to the point that, well, that they signed an agreement whereby they would diminish a few of their centrifuges and do a chemical process that could be reversed on some of their overly enriched nuclear-grade material so that they could buy thousands more tanks? Did you stop them? Or did you accelerate their activity?
Well, you stopped them. I mean, you accelerated their activity.
Yeah, accelerated their activity, yeah. So the military can only stop things if it is willing to be pervasive. For example, you could solve the problem of Islamic terrorism in Iraq by turning Iraq into glass. You could kill everyone there, and then there would be no influence of Islamic terrorism. The morality of that is not acceptable.
In the cases that you're using, though, because I do think that, all right, so if you're using a military as a defensive thing, so somebody's attacking you, stopping an attack, stop them from attacking you. Because
when was the last time America did that?
Well, I'm not saying that America's ever done that, but I'm saying that if you just take a military, just don't put a nation to it, and you say that this military, the only time we're ever going to use this is if somebody attacks us.
Yeah, and not just attack our military, because if you're attacking your military, then if you didn't have the military, they wouldn't have attacked you.
Yeah.
But put it in a different light. We're going to have a protective force so that if another nation attacks our citizens on our soil and tries to invade us, we will have the ability to repel them. You don't have a circumstance where that's happened in America, do you?
No, you don't. But I'm saying that, like you said at the start, there is a time to fight, and there is a time that, you know, hey, this is...
Yeah, if somebody attacks one of my children and I have the ability to stop them, I'm going to use whatever means is at my disposal to stop them from harming my children.
Exactly, and we even have cases where Yah did that.
Absolutely.
he flooded a great area.
All right, to protect his children from those that were trying to kill them.
There is a time for military, but there is not a time for the military that the United States has.
Actually, did the Israelites require a military? I don't think so. Seth, you brought up a good point, and I want to continue that thought. If there were a country that had a motivation for wanting to invade and occupy your country, let's say America, and that you could create a scenario where they not only had a motivation to invade and occupy, but the ability to project a force sizable enough to invade, and then they had the wherewithal to occupy the nation, and that their occupation could in some way create a benefit for them. If you could create that kind of a scenario, and you could credibly say there is this nation out there that could somehow want this and could somehow have the ability to do this and then could somehow benefit from it, and I'm going to tell you, you can't come up with a yes on any one of those three.
You can't do it as the United States.
And by the way, never could.
You can't do it as the United States.
Then I would say a real defensive force would have some merit. Yeah, we'd name the same country.
Yeah, well, Israel.
Israel, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Got no issue with them having the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. Now, that being the case, we get to this question that I have for you. We declared a war on terrorism, didn't we?
Yes.
Did we? And we invaded Afghanistan first. Is terrorism more prevalent or less prevalent in Afghanistan after we have been fighting that war on terrorism for the past 15 years?
It's been about as effective as the war on drugs.
Okay, so there's vastly more terrorism.
There is, yeah.
And it's far more deadly in Afghanistan than it was before we invaded and tried to stop it.
Well,
okay, let's go to Iraq.
Just before it was we're fighting Al Qaeda, and now it's Hamas, ISIS, all these other things.
All right. So let's go to Iraq. Under Saddam Hussein, how often was there a terrorist act perpetrated in Iraq under Saddam Hussein?
I can't remember hearing about any.
Yeah, there's one that is touted where he gassed the Kurds,
okay.
But that wasn't a terrorist act because those Kurds in that community had taken up arms as Iraqis against the Iraqi government on behalf of the Iranians. And so in that case, they were armed, and it was an act of war. In fact, even an act of self-defense. But that's the only act of terrorism that you can ascribe of any meaning to Iraq under Saddam Hussein. Now, is there any terrorism being perpetrated in Iraq today?
Yeah.
Is Iraq the ground zero for Islamic terrorism worldwide?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, this monastery that was bulldozed... How about the people? You know what happened to the people that were associated with that monastery and their families and their children and their daughters in particular?
I'm guessing either killed or sold into slavery of some sort.
They were all enslaved. That is correct. All enslaved.
It's weird, huh?
With exception of the leaders, of course, they will be killed. But at this point, they're all captives. They're all enslaved. So... I did the math on Iraq prior to its present state, where it's the Sunni-Shia civil war. And I determined by going through the 10 years of Saddam Hussein's rule and emphasizing the previous 5 years, and then went through at that point the 5 years after we deposed him. And I compared the quantity and consequence of terrorism in Iraq before we declared a war on terrorism in Iraq, and after. And I found that the change was over 1,000,000%. We exacerbated terrorism in Iraq by declaring war on it, by using our military. We exacerbated terrorism in Iraq by 1,000,000%. So did the military stop it?
No, definitely not.
No.
You can't. You never stop anything by being offensive.
Right. So the military couldn't stop terrorism, and it most certainly didn't build anything that was beneficial. It didn't create anything that is beneficial. Rather than solving a problem, our military deployment in Afghanistan and Iraq, as well as in Libya, and in particularly in Libya, made a bad situation much worse, didn't it?
And yeah, definitely. And let's.
So why would we continue to praise our military and the deployment of it when every time we use it, it makes a bad situation worse?
Well, take it a step farther. A lot of our economic, our debt is due to our military.
Right.
There's nothing that we spend more money on than the military. What? Where do you think?
Well, we do. Yeah, there are two things we actually spend more money on than the military. You know what they are?
Probably the benefits and things like that.
Medicare, Medicaid combined. Providing government-sponsored, government-controlled health care. And number two, Social Security, both of which are Ponzi schemes. Those are the big two, and then the military is number three under those.
So, but these are the things that when you're trying to balance your budget, you got to look at where most of your money's going,
right?
And then make the cuts from there.
You got to pull government out of. Well, we're not going to do any of these things, but you've got to. 1965 is when LBJ, creating the Great Society, introduced Medicare. And from that time, he said that that the federal play in the healthcare business in America would be no more than 1%. At the time, America was the number one country in the world in terms of quality of its health care and affordability of its health care. Since that time, we are the most expensive health care country in the world, and our health care isn't even in the top 50 in terms of quality. So we nationalized it, we socialized it, and we made it worse. Why would you continue to go down that path like Obama did with Obamacare to create a greater socialization, a greater federalization of health care when it has been so counterproductive? And no matter what you do in these things, we are simply making a bad situation worse. Glenn, what do you think about the world as we're seeing it, whether it be Greece, the activities of the Islamic State, or the benefit of our military fighting a war against terror?
Well, I know how things are going to be because I know a very knowledgeable individual once said that they will say peace, peace, but there will be no peace.
Yes, indeed. Yes, they will say peace, peace, but there will be no peace. Yeah. Yeah, the peace in Islam is I want a piece of this and I want a piece of that. Do you think that that the United States military, particularly with its new fancy fighter plane, you know,
the Turkey, the F-35 Turkey?
Yeah, the F-35 Turkey. Do you think that the F-35 Turkey is going to be effective in thwarting Islamic terrorism?
I think it's totally toast. I mean, we haven't seen. I mean, ever since we've had all this merger mania. Mm-hmm. Among the aircraft manufacturers and stuff, and
yes.
You know, it's nothing but one boondoggle. Left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. It's shooting so compartmentalized, nothing works. The Raptor hook on the Navy version for the supercarriers had to be rejiggered. The aiming helmet thing, the weapon system, doesn't work. We haven't even heard about the supposed vertical takeoff version.
That's because Pratt's engines have failed. They don't perform as they were supposed to perform, and so you've got you've got an airplane designed by a committee which is performing like a camel.
It's ridiculous. How many Harriers nosed into the deck before they finally got those somewhat stable? Even the Ospreys, even the Ospreys.
The Harriers and the Osprey are airplanes that require 40 to 50 hours of maintenance for 1 hour of flight time. I mean, that's like saying that, I think that that I can take out six camels with a $1 million drone dropping a $500,000 cruise missile. How much do you lose each time that you're successful?
I would rather, if I were a troop on the ground, I'd much rather know that I was going to have A-10s coming in for close air support and F-18 Super Hornets.
Did you read the results of the Iraq War and recognize that the A-10 killed as many Americans and under friendly fire as it did enemy? I analyzed every death of an American in Iraq over the first 2 years of that invasion, and the A-10 was the primary killer of Americans.
All right, well, so send Apaches in for close air support.
How about just not go?
What I'm saying is,
it's a recipe for disaster.
F-22 Raptors flying high cover for F-35 Turkey, on ground. That's a recipe for getting whacked.
Yeah, why don't you tell me how our submarine fleet is going to help us against Islamic terrorism?
Yeah, you have the boomers and the attack subs that go out with terrorists.
Yeah, we don't have any value whatsoever under any circumstance. Anyway, it is all absolute craziness, and there's only really one viable enemy. You can't create a scenario whereby you can paint Russia as a country that would have a motivation to invade America, the capability to invade and occupy America, or that would get a benefit out of invading and occupying America. And the same thing could be true with China. In fact, China would it would be suicide for China to do so, and Russia doesn't even have the motivation nor the ability. So why do we have this military? Who are we going to use it against?
Well, we're going to foment proxy wars and sell weapons. That's what they've been doing. The idea of a peer-to-peer major power war is unthinkable. And with, right. you'd have entire infrastructure of their own countries decimated within hours, right. And so it's just unthinkable. So they have to fiddle around with proxy wars.
Yes, that's what we do. We fought a proxy war against the USSR so that we empowered and armed the Taliban and Al-Qaeda to fight a proxy war and bit us. We fought a proxy war against the Iranians after we allowed the Ayatollah back by arming and equipping Saddam Hussein. Turned around and bit us. We are just constantly fighting proxy wars. You know how much we're spending now on proxies to go fight the Islamic State? $1 million per recruit. I would like your input, Glenn, on something that I was considering this morning. Everybody's having a conniption fit that Hillary Clinton not only used personal computers for classified information, but that she wiped her computers clean about Benghazi correspondence and then had them wiped clean by a company that has no security clearance, and how that all of those things are crimes that carry very substantial jail terms. I don't know why even any of that is an issue compared to Hillary Clinton knowingly and deliberately ignored the testimony that was coming out of Benghazi from the FBI and the State Department, the CIA and the State Department, altered the information that she was given, covered up the information that she was given, and created a scenario that rather than blaming the attack on Ansar Sharia, Friends of Sharia Law, who the State Department knew was perpetrating an attack, blamed it instead falsely on a Christian movie and condemned the Christian movie. Why are we fixated on the machine that she used as opposed to the consequence of her being deceitful in this way?
Well, the one might be more important, but in terms of what's prosecutable, I think the foreign, the Benghazi shenanigans, they're more subject to things like plausible deniability or...
she can't. She has no plausible deniability in knowing that it was Ansar Sharia. The CIA has made that emphatically clear. The CIA was working with and was arming Ansar Sharia. Ansar Sharia used their knowledge of the U.S. Embassy that had been given to them by their relationship with the U.S. CIA, and they used American weapons. And the State Department knew it was Ansar Sharia because they knew the individuals who were part of Ansar Sharia. She's got no deniability there, and she's got no plausible deniability when she blamed it on the Christian movie. She was deliberately trying to shield Islam and blame Christianity for Benghazi.
Right. And there's so many people with their hands in that, and there so many people are dirty on that. And
yeah, including the president.
Department of Foreign Relations stuff that there are many more people trying to cover it up.
But that should be something that would preclude her from being able to be elected, while the other simply makes her guilty of committing what I would consider to be a fairly minor crime.
Well, still multiple indictments possible. I personally like the new lawn sign, the new red, white, and blue lawn signs with pretty cursive writing on them that say Hillary for prison 2016.
I just don't. I mean, personally, I don't see it. When you look at the crimes that have been perpetrated by politicians that have been overlooked, for example, her husband perjuring himself under oath regarding the Monica Lewinsky affair. That is a crime that if you don't prosecute, then you make a mockery of the entire justice system in America, and yet we didn't prosecute it. That's a crime that is serious, and yet he was reelected. So,
right.
So, you know, I don't see crimes as being a big deal with politicians. They're all criminals.
Right.
But when they deliberately aid and abet the enemy that kills Americans and exposes our stupidity relative to those enemies, and then blames the something on somebody who had nothing to do with it,
right,
to try to promote a political agenda that's caustic to America, that ought to matter.
Right, it should. However, in terms of holding the attention of the American populace, in the case of the server, there's an actual piece of persisting physical evidence, the computer itself, it can look and see his wife and reset. There are these other emails. There are more people actually, I think, more likely to pay attention to that, considering foreign policy matters far too murky to be understood.
Yeah, perhaps because you can talk about the computer on a politically correct show, and that since Republicans dominate the radio talk show landscape, they're willing to talk about that, but they're not willing to talk about the fact that Ansar Sharia was known to the CIA and that Ansar Sharia perpetrated the murder of Americans using American weapons because of the stupidity of Americans arming jihadists to take out Muammar Gaddafi. They're not willing to do that.
Right. So then politicians don't want to touch that, and other people consider it too murky. The public considers it too murky to grasp.
Yeah, but since the majority of Americans are liberal, who's going to be concerned that a computer was misused?